This morning's topic is the topic of hesped in halacha and history. Many yeshivos, there's a practice not to study the halachos of avelus until they become relevant. So what ends up happening is during the shiva, the avel picks up a copy of one of the Hilchos Avelus books, and they can familiarize themselves with all the halachos that they'll need to know for the shiva and the shloshim and so on. But what happens to hesped? No one ever learns the halachos of hesped. They're actually halachos that govern the hesped. People think that, of course, it's so obvious. You get up and you say nice things about the person who passed away, and of course, all that is true. But it's actually a sugya, or a number of sugyas that require analysis and investigation to understand what hesped is all about. For this shiur, I want to use a format that is a little unusual. The halachos of hesped are fairly straightforward. There may be 7 or 8 topics that I want to cover with you in the time that we have together. In the course of our learning together, I want to just log 5 or 6 questions, issues that come up that will be kind of unresolved. We'll just put them to the side, and then when we're toward the end, I want to return to those 5 or 6 questions, reopen them, and make a larger argument about what I think might be going on here. You don't have to remember them. I'll remind you at the end when we get there. Okay, so the first question to ask is this obligation to give a hesped. Where does it come from? What's it about? Is it a Torah obligation? Is it a rabbinic obligation? What might be the source for hesped in the Torah? So if you haven't already looked at the source sheet, anyone want to venture a guess? Is there a source for this mitzvah? Avram. Okay, so the first source, and maybe the most obvious place to go, is the very beginning of Parshas Chayesara. Okay, so I have it for you in source number 1. The Torah tells us, "V'tam Asara b'kiryas arba hi chevron be'eretz Kanan v'yavo Abraham lispod l'sara v'liv kosa." Okay, so the first thing that Abraham does in the wake of Sarah's death is he delivers a eulogy for her. Okay, so clearly there's an early precedent. The first Jewish family, we have a precedent for hesped in the Torah. And then there's another source at the very end of Bereishis. Anyone remember the next time we see a hesped? Who gets a hesped? I have this for you in source number 1 also. This is the last chapter in Bereishis. The Torah tells us, "Vayavo ad garen ha'atad asher be'ever ha'yordain v'yispedu sham mispeid gadol v'kaved me'od v'yas l'aviv evel shivas yamim." Who are we talking about?
Yaakov.
Okay, so there's this v'yispedusha mispeid gadol v'kaved me'od. Okay, so a very heavy and long and elaborate and developed eulogy that goes on after Yaakov passes away. Okay, so does that mean that the mitzvah of hesped, of delivering a eulogy, is actually a mitzvah aseh d'oraisa? So the answer seems to be no. Look at the Rambam in source number 2. It's a very important Rambam with a reference to a number of very important mitzvos in the category that we would call gemilus chasadim. So the Rambam tells us, mitzvas asei shel divrehem, everything that's about to be on this list is a mitzvas asei shel divrehem, is a rabbinic mitzvah that kind of has an asterisk associated with it. Mitzvah sashay shel divrehem, to do the following: levaker cholim, ulenachem aveilim, ulahotzi ameis, ulahachnis kakala, vilavos orchim, ulis asik b'chol tarche akvura, laseis al haktaf, belilech lefana, vilispod, vilachpur vilikpur. Okay, so what's on this list? So bikur cholim, and nichum aveilim, and taking out the mace for burial, and making sure that the bride has enough money for the wedding, and inviting in guests and escorting them, being involved in all manner that pertains to the burial, carrying the deceased out from the place where the funeral takes place to the place of burial, and performing a eulogy, and then digging the grave, burying, and so on. The list continues. And the end of the third line, Ve'eluhen, the Rambam says, Ve'eluhen gemilus chasadim shebegufo she'en lahem shiur. I just want to let you know that anything on my list is considered to have no limit. Okay, you're never finished with any of these mitzvos. You can't check off the box. You know, the pricking up a lulav and esrog on the 15th of Tishrei, so you pick it up and you shake it and you're done, and the mitzvah is finished. These mitzvos, you're never finished. Hang on 1 second, doctor. Okay, and afal pisha kol mitzvos elu midivreihen. Now, this is the asterisk. Look what the Rambam writes. He says, yeah, these are rabbinic. Okay, there's not a mitzvah to say in the Torah. There's no pasuk that tells you have an affirmative obligation to perform a eulogy. Nonetheless, hareihen bichlal v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. All of these mitzvos on my list, the Rambam says, fall under a category, a headline called v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, which of course we understand is totally intuitive. Kol advarim shata ratesh yasu osam l'cha acherim ase ata osan l'achicha betara uva mitzvos. Okay, so what you'd want to be done to you for others, by others, you do for others. Okay, so it's something more than just a rabbinic obligation. It's a rabbinic obligation which falls under the headline of the ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Doctor? Great. Okay, so flag that. I want to come back to that. That's a very important question. So we're just opening this up here, but now we have to get to Dr. Rosenberg's question, which is just whose obligation is this? Right? So is everyone in the community obligated to give a hesped? Do you hire a professional? Is it the rabbi? Is it the child? Whose obligation is it to deliver a hesped? Okay. So let's learn a halacha together as the Torah formulates this. In source number three, just to get a little meat on the bone to figure out what this mitzvah is all about. As an introduction, the Torah writes the following. He says, "Mitzvah gedola lahaspid al hames kiraui, v'chol hamis atzel behespedau shel adam kasher enu marich yamim v'raui lekovro bechayav." Wow, what's a pretty harsh formulation. Okay, that's why we learn these halachos on Tisha B'Av. So, mitzvah gedola. I want to make this our first question that we're going to log. Hey, the 613 positive mitzvos, 613 mitzvos deraisa, right? 365 negative, 248 positive. This might not even be a mitzvah deraisa, and yet mitzvah gedola. How often do you find that formulation in the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch? Probably counted on one hand the number of times when this formulation occurs. Mitzvah gedola, very important mitzvah. Okay, so why is this such an important mitzvah? Very important mitzvah to eulogize the person who's passed away in the right way. And anyone who is negligent about the performance of this mitzvah of an Adam Kasher, okay, and I want to log this as another question. It's an unusual formulation. Adam Kasher is not a tzaddik. Adam Kasher, how would you translate Adam Kasher? It's hard. I'd say like a good guy, right? Adam Kasher, upstanding citizen. So, if provided that the person is an upstanding citizen, so parentheses, why? If he was less than an upstanding citizen, so he doesn't get a hesped? Well, we learn the mitzvah of kvura from someone who committed a capital offense and was executed. And even they get a kvura. So, shouldn't everyone deserve a hesped? Why should we start discriminating? Someone is a little, you know, better member of the community, a little less active member. You have to be an Adam Kasher to deserve a hesped. Every Jew should get a hesped. Okay, so just park that away as question number two. If you're negligent with respect to delivering a hesped for an Adam Kasher, wow, so your days are not going to be lengthened, and you are deserving of being buried alive. Doctor?
What if someone specifically, before they die, say, I did not want a hesped at my funeral?
Okay, so great question. Dr. Wolf said, what if somebody says, I don't want it? I don't want a hesped. It's not for me. I'm not one of those people. When I die, just take me to the cemetery. Do not pass go. Okay. So, do we listen? Do we have to respect that wish? If someone says or someone writes in their will, no eulogy for me. Okay, so we're going to come back to that very important question: can a person waive their eulogy? Okay. So, just pick up in the where we left off in the tour. What is the mitzvah? And again, we'll circle back to all of this, but just getting our feet wet. Mitzvah so she'arim kolo lomar alav dvarim hamishabrim halev kidei laharbos b'chiyah. Okay, the mitzvah is to raise one's voice. This is the person delivering the eulogy. They should raise one's voice to say things which, you know, we have the same idiom in English, hamishabrim halev. They break the hearts of the listeners. Kidei laharbos b'chiyah, get the people to cry. Well, that's the goal of the eulogy. People should hear the words and they should cry. Ulahaschir shivcho, and you should mention the praise of the decedent. V'asur lahaflig b'shivcho yoser midai. We're going to come back to this too. One second. Which is, there's a prohibition against exaggerating the praise yoter midai. Okay, it sounds like there's license in there to do a little exaggerating, but not too much. So we need to sort that out. Okay? Ella, what should you do? Maskirim midosav hatzavos shebo, masifahem ktsas. Okay, you should say the things about the person, which were the positive aspects, their virtues. Just don't add too much. Just add a little. Okay, Simcha, question?
The Torah is saying that the purpose of hesed is to cause entitlement to pride.
Yeah.
So going back to the original of Avraham, it says, this fight is sorrow with chesed. So the same way that you're saying we have a chiyuv for hesed, how come we're not demanding that there has to be a chiyuv as part of it?
Okay, so that's a fair question. Why can't we?
Yeah.
So that's probably the answer. Is that it's kind of not biyadcha. You know, it's like you can't necessarily legislate people's reaction, but at least bodlis or aviliv kosa, that has to be the goal. Deliver the eulogy so that the people hearing the words of the eulogy will be moved to tears. Okay, almost on a literal level. Okay, continuing in the tour, Rakshalo Yaflik Bioser, just don't exaggerate too much. Vimlohayaba Midos Tovos Klal. Okay, if it weren't Tisha B'Av, so there's a whole genre of jokes about people who have no qualities that can be eulogized. Okay, so not for today. But what if somebody dies and it's just you have nothing? There's nothing that you could say that's positive, that's affirmative about them. So so then what could you say? Then don't say anything. And each person according to their virtues. If somebody is a great sage, so you talk about their scholarship. If someone is very pious, you talk about their piety, etc. Just be careful. Don't start making things up that aren't true. Don't start exaggerating in a way that has no basis. Yes, Steve.
We've learned in the past that if we find a dead body in our community, but we don't even know who the person is, we also have the obligation to do an expert on someone we don't even know, so we know nothing about the person. So what can we say?
That's a great question. And I wasn't planning on talking about that today. It actually doesn't come up in the halachos of Hesped. And it really doesn't even come up in the halachos of Meis Mitzvah, which is the case that you're talking about. But remind me if I don't come back to it. I'm going to circle back to it when we talk about whose obligation it is. But it's a great point, meaning you're up a creek without a paddle. We don't know anything. So how could anyone possibly fulfill that obligation? Very important observation. Okay. So that's actually a perfect segue. And let's turn now. Two people have asked this question. Just whose obligation is this to deliver the eulogy? Okay. So let's learn a halacha in source number four. Which is the Shulchan Aruch writes the following. He says, Yorshim she'enem rotzim lifroa schar hasavdan motzin mehen bal korcha. Okay, I'm only going to answer this question partially because I want to circle back to it later. But the only evidence that we have so far from the halachos and the Shulchan Aruch about whose obligation it is to deliver the eulogy is there's something about the Yorshim, the heirs. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that the heirs who somehow do not wish, for whatever reason, to pay for the professional eulogizer, so the money can be extracted from them against their will, provided that the money comes from the estate. So what's this, a legal question? So what's the scenario, first of all? So it seems very foreign, but I'll say in a second why it's actually not so foreign. In ancient times, there would be a professional safdan, a professional makoning. So maybe the family would speak, maybe they wouldn't speak, I don't know. But there would be a professional who would get up, and it would be their job to deliver the eulogy and to get people to wail and to cry. They'd sometimes hire professional wailers. And the halacha is asking in source number 4, just whose obligation is it to pay for this? Okay, it's not free. You have to pay for the person who's going to deliver the eulogy or be the mekonein. So the first clue that we have is that the Shulchan Aruch writes that it's the obligation of the heirs, okay, to pay for this person. I say it seems ancient, but it's actually not. This doesn't happen too much in the Orthodox community, because most Orthodox Jews are members of a shul and there's someone to, you know, officiate or organize the funeral. But what if someone is unaffiliated? They have no rabbi. So every funeral home in every Jewish funeral home that I know of has a list. And a list of rabbis who are on call to deliver eulogy if a family has no rabbi. So the funeral home will say to the family, would you like someone to officiate? And if the family says yes, so the funeral home will say, okay, you tell us what box. You want it to be a man or a woman, Orthodox, conservative. And they'll make a call and they'll say, you know, Rabbi Goldstein, we have a family. Would you meet with them? They have passing. Would you officiate at the funeral? So it's not such a foreign concept that someone might have to shell out cash to pay for someone to deliver a eulogy. And the question is, just whose obligation would that be? Okay. So let's come back now to the question that Dr. Wolf asked, and that is, can someone waive their eulogy? Okay. So someone writes in their will, you know, not for me, don't eulogize me, and then we get to the will. We open it up and says, oh, you know, Zaidi didn't want a eulogy. What do we do now? So what do you think? Are you supposed to listen to the words of the deceased? Or do you say, no, we just heard the shir. We just learned the sugya. You have to give a eulogy. What do you say? There's no wrong answer. I mean, there is, but you could try. Dr. Wolf says yes. Yes to what? Yes, you listen, or yes, you don't listen? You listen. You let it go.
It's in their honor. If they're requesting not to have one done, you
respect. Okay, so one second. So Dr. Wolf says the idea is to honor the deceased. So if they don't want the honor, they could let it go. Okay, very very sound logic.
I would say no.
Jed? Okay, so Jed raised a great point. He said in the halacha of kivud av v'aim, if you know the mitzvah is to honor your parents, but the parent says violate Shabbos, so you can't listen. So why is this so different? It probably is the parent, right, who's saying this to the kids. I want you to violate the halacha. Don't deliver a hesped. So why do they have that right? I would say don't listen to them. Give the hesped. Yeah, doctor. Okay, so you thread the needle. You want to have your cake and eat it too. You give the eulogy, but you mention that this is this contravenes the wishes of the deceased. You know, Zaidi didn't want it, but we're doing it anyway. Okay, Steve?
If we combine two obligations, one is for the husband, and the other one is to cry and to mourn.
Yeah.
And in order to be able to cry and to mourn, we might need the eulogy, because that's going to help us in crying and mourning, and that then it assists us, those who are still here, who are around, who are mourning the deceased, then we need the hesed. Because for us, it's not so much for the... Because we need that in order to fulfill the mitzvah of mourning and crying.
Okay, great. So you just cracked open. This is the machlokas between Steve and Mike. So Mike says it's the honor of the deceased. Steve says it's really for the people who are in the world of the living. So you can't just forego it. Avi? Perfect. Okay, we're going to get a perfect formulation. Come back to that in a second. Yeah, two last comments, Seth, and then Kobe.
Perhaps the Hesped is just getting up there and saying this person is so unhoused that they want to forego it. They're going to have an Hesped and they're not giving a full Hesped.
Okay, so along the lines of Dr. Rosemary, like you could thread the needle and you could just say what they, you know, what they wished, and maybe that constitutes the Hesped. Yeah, great. Kobe? Right. Okay. Right. So that's the fundamental question: is what is within his control? Right. Any lawyers in the room want to weigh in?
Not from a legal perspective.
Not from a legal, but we want. It's not a billable hour. Yeah.
And,
yeah. We were there. Okay. Yeah. So, exactly this tension. Yes, Steve. Okay. Well, so we're going to come to that too. Like, let's say somebody dies on a day when there's no hesped. Like, we're going to come back to that in a second, right? And somebody always gets up and says, "Oh, we're not giving a hesped, but we're going to say something," right? It's Rosh Chodesh. It's Erev Pesach. Right, okay, so hold on to that. I want to come back to that as well. Okay, so this Gemara in source number 5, this Gemara in Sanhedrin, raises exactly the debate that just got formulated here, which is Ibayilahu. They asked the following question: Hespeda yakara dechayehu, yakara dechayehave, or yakara deshichvehave? So we have to understand something fundamental about the nature of eulogy. Is it for the kavod of the of the living, or is it for the kavod of the deceased? So the Gemara says, "Lamai nafkamina." Who cares? What's riding on this debate? Is there any practical difference? So de amar lo tispiduha lahu gavra. Okay, so exactly our case. So one place where it matters is if the person says, "Don't eulogize me." Well, if it's for him, so he could let it go. If it's for us, the world of the living, then he can't let it go. Okay? Inami lafuki miyurshin, or the question of whether or not you could, in fact, extract money from the decedents, right? Like the opposite case. So again, it's a little hard to imagine because we're like nice, civilized people. But what if the heirs say, we don't want it. We know Zadie wanted a eulogy, but we don't have the time or the energy or the effort. We didn't have a good relationship. We don't want to do it. So do they have the right to say, we're not doing it? Right. So again, maybe it's their cover. They could just say, no, we're not interested. Right. Or is it about the deceased? In which case it's up to him, not about those in the world of the living. So the Gemara goes back and forth for quite a while. And the Gemara concludes, Yikara deshichvehu shmamina. And the Gemara concludes that it is the kavod of the deceased which is the determining factor, in which case the deceased has the ability to waive his eulogy. The Gemara entertains both sides of this debate. Who's it for? And the conclusion of the Gemara is it's really for the deceased. So if the deceased says I don't want it, so we listen to his words, and there's no eulogy. Okay. Okay, great. So, but what about the rest? Meaning, what about our right? How does this jibe with everything we've been talking up until now? How does this jibe with our obligation to eulogize and to say nice things and to produce tears and so on? So let me just say two kind of notes or two extensions of this principle. One is a Gemara Yushalmi that I have for you in source number 6, which just kind of echoes this sentiment. Hames yodeya v'shomea kiluso kimito hachalo. Okay, so this is now entering the realm of metaphysics, which is less my expertise. But the Yerushalmi says that the decedent knows and hears what's being said about him the way that one would experience a communication in a dream. So their neshama is still present. Their neshama is still hovering. And they are listening to the words of the eulogy. Anything that's said in their presence, they're going to hear. Ad shiyistam hagolel, until the end of the burial. When the burial is complete, so at that point, they don't hear what is said anymore. So, and again, in source number 7, Abraham Saba, the author of the Tzur Hamur, who's Kabbalist living through the expulsion of Spain in 1492. So he writes the following. He says, "Shakina v'hesped heim dvarim mo'ilim me'od le'nefesh hames." So on some kind of level, he says that the lamentation and the eulogy help the nefesh of the deceased. So, again, echoing this sentiment, it's for the deceased, it's about the deceased is listening, we're trying to do something for the kavod of the deceased, and therefore, if the deceased wants to waive their eulogy, at least in this moment, in this year, we're going to say that they have the ability to do so, and you could see in source number 8, halacha lemaaseh, that's black on white, and the Shulchan Aruch, mi shetzivasha lo yispiduhu shomin lo. Someone says, don't eulogize me, we listen to them. Okay. So I'm just going to say, log another question in the back of your mind. For us, rationalists who are maybe not so, fluent in the language of what it means for the deceased to be listening. So what does all of this mean in the world of the physical as opposed to the realm of the medical, metaphysical? And how do we understand the conclusion of this Gemara? Okay. Now, we've all been there, okay? We've all been to the funeral. Maybe we all haven't been. But many of us have been to the funeral where someone actually said, Zaidi said, don't eulogize me, but we're not going to do that. We just can't. He's too special, and we need to say something. So there is on the books this exception to the rule. The exception is if someone is a giant, someone is a big communal leader. In that case, we violate the rule, and we go ahead and we eulogize someone even if they've made explicit their desire not to be eulogized. It's a little hard to read. Source number 9 is a sefer from the end of the 17th century called the Beis Yaakov. It was written by a man called Yaakov ben Shmuel of Zhytomyr. And I'll just summarize it. He writes in source number 9, it's a book of Shilas and Shuvos. He says, what if the Gadol Hador dies? And he said, don't eulogize me. Do we listen? And he said, no, we don't listen. If the Gadol Hador dies, we give a eulogy irrespective of the fact that they said, don't eulogize me. Okay, and I'll just share with you a couple of cases from Jewish history where this happened. So you can see in source number 10, I have the Shailos and Tshuvos of the Tshuva Mi'ahava. Tshuva Mi'ahava is not that well known, but the Tshuva Mi'ahava is written by a man called Rabbi Elazar Fleckelis. He was really just extraordinary Talmud Chacham. He was the Talmud Mufak of the Noda Bihuda, and after the Noda Bihuda passed away, he became the chief rabbi of Prague. Just encyclopedic knowledge of all of the Jewish canon. Just amazing to read his tshuvos. And he said that he once found in someone's memoir. I have it for you in the bold here. He says, I have this story, which I'll just summarize for you, that someone said, I found in my father's diary a story from a previous chief rabbi of Prague, namely the Pnei Yoshua. Pnei Yoshua was the greatest Torah giant of the 18th century, Rev. Yaakov Yeshua Falk. And the story is that when the Pnei Yoshua died, let's say before he died, he said, I want no eulogies. Okay? And what happened? So we have the diary, the guy who was there and said nobody listened, and the Jewish community got together and said it's the Pnei Yoshua. He's too big, he's too important, and they gave hespedim for the Pnei Yoshua against his express wishes not to be eulogized. And there's a second famous story about Rabbi Akiva Eger, who made the same request, and the Chasam Sofer, his son-in-law, said, "We're not listening." And the Chasam Sofer gave a eulogy for his father-in-law, Rabbi Akiva Eger. Question?
So I doubt it's written anywhere, but since it's so important, we talked about the two purposes: one for the nifter, and also for the family. Should, if someone says it verbally, do not make a hesped, should one try to speak and explain the importance the rest of the family for closure for them?
You're saying you want to make an exception?
No. If someone expresses, doesn't write it, because who reads the will before the burial? No one reads.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
So if they say, "Achrei mot kadoshim," don't eulogize me. Is there anything written about it? Try to reason with the person, explain the importance of a hesped, not only for him but for the rest of the family.
Yeah. So hold on to that. Meaning, should you try to persuade someone not to do that, right? Someone says, "I don't want a eulogy." Should you say, "Let's learn the sugya. We'll open up, Shin Mem Dalet, and we'll learn the sugya together. It's a big deal to have a eulogy. Don't be so quick to let it go." So I think the answer is yeah. That's certainly a conversation. But in my experience, when people are at a certain stage, not so easy to reason with them. So the next question I just want to log for the second half of this year is, why do we make this exception? We just learned it. We learned the Gemara. It's black on white. The halacha is, somebody says no eulogy, there's no eulogy. So who are we to say, we know better, right, than the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch? No, they said it, but we know better, and we're going to give a eulogy. Why do we get to do that, and why do we have exceptional cases, for the Gadol Hador? Why does that matter? I'm saying if a Jewish person is of sound mind and says, "I don't want a eulogy," so that's the end of the story. Okay. Okay, so that's great. There is such a suggestion, like we know. Right. If only they knew how much their eulogy was going to affect the people listening, they never would have said it, in which case the fact that they said it, really, they didn't mean it. Maybe. Doctor?
Cover the Torah.
Cover the Torah.
I mean, the outside community would look and say, what, they don't value their great leaders?
Yeah. There's such an explanation on the books as well, which is, it just can't be. It would be embarrassing for the family, for the community. Again, maybe people won't really know, or you'll say it, but people won't hear it, and people will say, like, oh, Must be some story there why this person got no eulogy. That's a consideration as well. Okay, so let's just jump ahead for 1 second to sources 11 and 12. Is there a playbook, right, for how to give a eulogy? Provided that you're going to be giving a eulogy, what do you say and what don't you say? Okay, so we already saw the kind of headline, which is the purpose of the eulogy is twofold. You can see in source number 11, Tzivasur shiarim kolo lomar alav dvarim hamishabrim esalev. So point number one is you're supposed to say things which are affective and evoke some kind of emotional response, bring people to tears. And kidei laharbos b'chia. And the second, ulahaskir shivcha. And the second is to praise, to offer words of praise to the deceased. Okay. And the Rambam, characteristically, tells us that we should be cautioned to choose a middle path when we decide what to say and what not to say in a eulogy. Okay, al yiskashe adam al meso yeser midai. Okay, so you can't go overboard. Shenamar al tifku lemeis v'al tenuda lo kilomar yeser midai shuzeu minhago shalolam. He says, people die. Everyone dies. It's the course of life. To live and then to die. So he says you can't go to extremes. V'amitzar atzmo yoser al minhago shalolam hareze tipesh. Okay, so there's a normal amount of an emotional reaction which is to be expected when a loved one passes away, and that's the normal course of things, and that's what you should do. And if you exceed that, so at some point that just becomes ridiculous. Ela keitzad yaseh. He says there's a course for this. Shlosh lebechi, shiva lehesped, shloshim yom letisporas, uleshar chamisha dvarim. Okay, so he says we know, right? There's a progression that we usually just think of shiva and shloshim. There's an even more detailed progression in the halacha, which is that the first 3 days of shiva are more intense, and then you have the balance of shiva, then you have the shloshim, and so on. He says, but you can't go to the opposite extreme either. Halacha Yud Beis, kol mi she'eino mis'abel kemo she'tzivu chachamim, harei ze achzari. If someone fails to mourn the way that a normal person would mourn, so that's just cruel. Okay, that's not a Jewish value. El yifached v'idag v'pashpesh b'masav yachzor b'tshuvo. It has to affect you, and you have to be introspective. It has to move you. If someone's passed away and you're unmoved, so that's a particularly un-Jewish reaction. That is achzarios. That is nothing less than cruelty. Okay. Let me share with you a couple final pieces of the details of these halachos, and then I want to see if we can unpack a larger argument. There's a fascinating Ran, which no one quotes, and I've never seen it observed lahalacha, but it's actually quite intuitive. The question is, we all know that all things being equal, we try to bury right away. Okay, there's a negative commandment in the Torah, one of the 200 and one of the 365 los haseis in the Torah is halanas hameis. You're not allowed to leave a body of someone who's passed away overnight. You bury them immediately. You bury them immediately the same day. What's the exception to the rule? Sometimes you get a notice, someone's passed away, the funeral's tomorrow. 1 second, there's a mitzvah in the Torah. You're not allowed to wait till the next day. Why are you waiting till the next day? So Shabbos is not enough time, so then you'll wait. But the exception to the rule is if you can add kavod to the mace by waiting, you can wait. So what's the example of adding kavod to the mace? So the other sibling, lives in Chicago and has to get here. So you're going to have the funeral before the family is present. You're not going to do that. So we always wait, right, to make sure that everyone is gathered. By the way, in Israel, there's much less waiting. Okay, in Yerushalayim, they don't wait for anybody. The Minhag Yerushalayim is you perform the burial. The family's not there, it doesn't matter. you perform the burial right away. But even outside of Yerushalayim in Israel, they're much more machmir about this. It's a smaller country. I don't just mean that tongue-in-cheek, but you know, people are not often hours and hours away. They can get there. They can get there quickly, and they expedite the burial. And very often, it's literally the same day. But if we're going to add kavod by delaying, so that's a perfectly acceptable thing to do when it comes to the burial. The question is, does the same halach apply to hesped? Could you delay the burial so that you will have a better hesped, a better eulogizer, more hespedim? Look at the Ran in source number 13. Ba'al derech zeh mutar la'alinas ha'meis b'shvil ha'hesped. He says, yes. He said, I would allow the burial to be delayed. Bishvil ha-hesped. He just says, because of hesped. He doesn't tell you the details of what he means by that. But we could sort of imagine, right, that you can improve the quality or the quantity of the hesped by waiting. She'ein ha-kavod ha-hesped mo'ilo klum. Okay, she'ein kavod ha-hesped mo'ilo klum. Mikol makom, kol zman she'bnei adam miskabdim bo, ein halana bizayim. He says, you know, the kavod hesped doesn't help the deceased, but he says, you know, to the extent that people will add kavod to the deceased by waiting for this reason, he says that's not going to be a bizayon. He says it's not exactly kavod ames, but neither is it a bizayon to the mace, it's somewhere in the middle, and he would allow one to delay if somehow the hesped can be improved. Let's look at one final issue, which we touched on right at the beginning, and then we'll turn to the second half of the shiur. And that is the question of whether or not one can exaggerate. And the tour, the Shulchan Aruch, says you can exaggerate. Source number 14, you can't go overboard. Don't exaggerate too much. You can add. Okay, so just jump for a second to source number 16. This is the best formulation. The Taz says, Umosin Bahem Ktsas. He says, you could add a little. He says, Kasha. He says, I don't understand this at all. Mali sheker me'at, mali sheker harbe. He says, we're going to base this on degrees. If you're lying a little or you're lying a lot, you're still lying. So why is that allowed? Don't we have this principle, midvar sheker tirchak? You're giving a eulogy. Shouldn't you be honest? Shouldn't you say things that are true? How do you help anything by saying things that are dishonest, untrue, inflated, hyperbolic? What are you accomplishing? Just say the MS, right? He came to shul three times a day. No, he came to shul every Shabbos. We know the guy. He wasn't in shul every day. It's not true. So why are you allowed to exaggerate in the eulogy? Okay, so I'll share with you four answers. Anyone want to venture a guess as to why that's allowed? Why you're allowed to exaggerate? I mean, there's no other time in life where we say, oh, you could lie a little, you know. No, we don't lie. Why are you allowed to lie a little when it comes to a eulogy? Okay, so four answers here. Source number 15. The Bach says, I'll tell you the issue. He says, "Ba'avel Rabasi bi'al pi mashipirish bo Ramban, based on a medrash and based on the Ramban, b'tara sadan b'niro de lefida aser lekatzer b'shivcho." Al-Kain, Hitira Lahosif Ktsas. He says, you know, what you're not allowed to do in a eulogy is undershoot. If you say something which is not accurate in the other direction, so you said something which didn't fully capture how many mitzvot they did, how great they were. Right? To undershoot is a real prohibition. Right? That is not permitted. So he said, Al Kain Hitiru Lahosif Ptas, Dim Yehe Asr Lahosif, Ika Lahu Shemachas Vashalani Katzer. He says, better to overshoot than to undershoot. We never want to be in a position where you get up to Shemaim after 120 and say, you know, you gave a eulogy for your beloved grandfather, but you didn't do him justice. You only said, you know, a portion of what the truth. No, it should always err on the other side of saying too much and being too flattering rather than go the other way. Answer number one of the Bach. The Taz, who asked that question, Kashe Mali Sheker Me'at Mali Sheker Harbe, he says, V'nir Alessei Stam Lezeh, Zedavar Mistaber, who Shekol Misha Oseh Eze Mitzvah Kugon Stuck of Chiyotiba, Be'eze Shir, Bevadeim Hayab Ali Yado Davar Hatzorach Tzas Yoser, Vade Lo Hayam Aniach Mele Asos, Gam Osu Ashir. Ki Lo Hayam Ashchis Bavur Davar Muat, Yoser Elkein, Nechshav Lo Ki Ilu Asa'u, Ve'ein Kan Edu Sheker Alav. So the Taz says, you know, you need to factor in what the circumstances might have been if things had been a little different. So this person gave, X amount of tzedakah. He says, but, you know, maybe he had other obligations or he didn't have more. But if he had more, he would have done more. So you're not saying something which is untrue. You're just saying something which looks at what the circumstances might have been or what this person would have done had the circumstances been a little different. It's a different way of saying we're giving him the benefit of the doubt. So to exaggerate a little just gives him the benefit of the doubt. Had circumstances been a little different, he certainly would have done a little better. He certainly would have done a little more. Okay, the Ramban gives a very important answer. He says in source number 17, Asr la flugei behespeda biyikara de shichche tzvei, you can't say more than what's true. Says you have to do something which is befitting the person who's passed away, not more than that. But he says in the way that's done. So it's like great inflation. Right? Everyone always exaggerates in the eulogy. So if you get up and you just say something that is unexaggerated, right, you're actually going to paint the person in a light in which they shouldn't appear. So there's an industry standard, which is everybody does this when it comes to a eulogy. If you don't do it, right, you're actually going to make the person look worse than they deserve to be. Okay, and the final answer from the Chida in source number 18. He says, why are you allowed to add a little? So he says, he says, you know, how much do we know? So he says, we're only privy to what we know about the person. But surely, you know, the stuff that we didn't know. So he says, you're not really exaggerating. You're just making an assumption about the piece of the person that was less known to you or unknown to you. Okay. So let me just pose one more question, and then I want to see if we can begin to wrap things up. Last question I want to pose, which someone already started to mention, is we've all been to the funeral on a day when there's not supposed to be any hesbedim. Okay, and there are many days on the Jewish calendar when there's not supposed to be a hesbed. Every Friday afternoon after chatzos is not supposed to be a hesbed. Rosh Chodesh, day one, day two, there's not supposed to be a hesped. There's not supposed to be a hesped on Purim. There's not supposed to be a hesped on Hanukkah, on Chol HaMoed, right? There's a long list. So we know, obviously, Shabbos, Yantiv, there's a long list. The whole of Chodesh Nisan, we don't give hesped. So, you know, I was once in Breuers, and they actually fulfilled this halacha. They said, today is Hanukkah. The person who passed away would be deserving of a long eulogy, but it's Hanukkah, so today there is no eulogy. Michtam le David. That was the whole service. Right? They actually fulfilled this halacha. Okay, the other 99.9% of times in our life, we get to the eulogy, and the rabbi gets up and says, today is Rosh Chodesh. Really, we shouldn't be delivering a eulogy. But, and then for the next hour, we have, you know, words of tribute. So, well, it's a joke. I'm saying, well, every rabbi that I know, all my colleagues, I've done it 100 times. So why is that okay? I'm saying, we're learning these halachos. So there's days when you give a eulogy, and there's days when you don't give a eulogy. So we know better. We're so much smarter than the halacha, this exception. Why? Why is that okay? Why do we just play fast and loose with the halachos of Hesped? Okay. So to get to some kind of solution, resolution, to begin to tie things together, let me just share with you an unusual halacha and a beautiful formulation of the Gesher Achayim, which I think we all have kind of been suspecting or are hoping for all along, and Gesher Achayim puts it in writing. So one more halacha that I just want to share with you, just to kind of pique our interest and get our attention. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Chacham Shemes, if a sage dies, like the head of a Beis Medrash, Chacham Shemes Beis Midrasho Batel, Shesoftino So Kol Shiva. So his Beis Medrash closes for the whole week because they eulogize him for the entire Shiva. And it's very strange. Right? We never heard of this. I didn't say this at the beginning because it just went without saying. When do we give a eulogy? When do we give a eulogy? We give a eulogy after the person has passed away, before they're buried. Okay? Universally. Anyone ever heard of a eulogy after the burial? No such thing. So what are we talking about here? That Shesoftino So Kol Shiva, they're going to have eulogies the whole Shiva? Bizarre. What kind of case could we possibly be talking about? Okay. So park that question in the back of your mind. So let's try to tie things together. And it begins with source number 20 from the Gesher Achayim. So he writes the following. He says, Kol stam hesped hu kodem hakura. So as we just said, right, the default is that the hesped will always be prior to the burial, just like we learned in the beginning of Parshas Chayesara. Kitiksiv vayavo Avraham lispod lesara v'liv kosa. He gives the eulogy, and then he negotiates with the Bnei Ches to find the burial fire. The eulogy comes before the burial. Okay? L'meis shahaya bal tara umasim. Someone died, and there again, an Adam Kasher, a Bal Tara Masim, good person, upstanding citizen, Maspidim Shiva Yamim, eulogize them all 7 days. Ulagadol be Yisrael, Shloshim Yom. And if they're really a giant, then 30 days. Kidematzinu b'Moshe ve'Aaron, just like we found in the Torah, with respect to Moshe and Aaron, Ulagadol Ador, Yud Beis Chodesh, and for the Gadol Ador, it could even be 12 months. So, and this, again, you can see in source number 12, Lahalacha, the Aruch HaShulchan says that you would even, you'd close the Beis Medrash and you'd give the eulogies for all 7 days. So, this is the final question that I want to entertain. Why would this be, what would it mean for there to be Hespedim after the burial? Who ever heard of such a thing? Okay, so just to recap, the questions that we've talked about and that we've logged, mitzvah gedola, right? Why is the mitzvah of hesped considered to be a great mitzvah? Why does it matter that we've seen different formulations, but these an adam kasher, a gadol, any Jew, right, should be entitled to a hesped? Why does it matter what their level of piety was in their lifetime? We saw the Gemara that really the hesped is for the honor of the deceased. We said, how do we rationalists understand this? What does it mean that the person who's passed away is listening in? What does it mean when the Gemara tells us, or the poskim tell us, that if someone is the gadol hador, we could, you know, violate his wish to forego the eulogies? What about this gimmick that we all have seen and been party to of it's Rosh Chodesh, we're not going to give a eulogy, we'll just say words of tribute? And what would this mean that we would deliver Hespedim after the burial for the length of the Shiva for a god? Okay, so let's learn source number 22, the continuation of that Gesher Achayim, which I think will help us bring things to some resolution. So the fundamental question that really everything is riding on is what's the purpose of the eulogy? And the Gemara concluded that the purpose of the eulogy was for the Kavod HaMeis. The Gesher Achayim says not so fast. He says, "Oh, nira le'anius daiti, hadimibayi le'imishum yikra de'chayim, imishum yikra de'shichvei, Hainu shelibayle hai minayhu ikar. He says, we made a mistake. When we read that Gemara, we said, ah, oh, what's it for? What's the purpose of eulogy? Is it for the living or is it for the deceased? He says, it didn't mean in such a binary formulation, is it one or the other? He says, what the Gemara meant was, which one is the ikar? Which one is the principal reason for the hesped? But no one ever thought that if it's A, it's not B, or if it's B, it's not A. It's just that which one is considered to be the principal reason, but not to the exclusion of the other reason. Ubishvil mit tiknu a hesped. What we're really asking is, for whom was the hesped ordained? Ava be'emes yeshkan gam yikre dechayeh v'gam yikre deshech. He says, but at the end of the day, you have to recognize that it's really both. That it's really both for the kavod of the deceased, and it's really just as much, or maybe a little less, it's really also about the honor of the living. Okay. So, and again, in the interest of time, I'll just summarize what he goes on to say. He says, what it means when we listen to the person who says, don't eulogize me, he's telling us that the principal value is for the deceased. Right? And there could be times when we will in fact listen and we'll let it go, but you also have to remember that the eulogy is also for the living. So we're taking the decision out of the hands of those who are living, but not because it's not about them. Now, I'm sorry, I wasn't able to find the exact quote, so I didn't put it on the source sheet. But Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs of blessed memory, once shared the following thought about eulogies. And if anyone happens to come across it, just you know, send me the source, because his formulation will surely be better than the formulation that that I'm about to share. But what Rabbi Sachs said was that eulogies articulate and reaffirm the values of our community. They force us to reflect on just what it is that we consider virtuous. The person delivering the eulogy has to go through the material and make decisions. This was pious, this was virtuous, he was honest. I want to talk about honesty as a virtue. He always treated his customers fairly. I want to talk about integrity as a virtue. He took time to get to know people, and I want to talk about noticing people as a virtue. And then there are other parts that the person delivering the eulogy will assuredly leave out, because we're making an affirmative decision that, you know, that wasn't so virtuous. That wasn't something that we wanted to spend time talking about and focusing on. The idea is that the eulogy of an Adam Kasher, that the eulogy of a person we deem to be, fill in the blank, right? And we've seen lots of formulations. A Baal Torah, a Baal Masim Tovim, an Adam Kasher, a Gadol, someone who is a Chassid, someone who is a Chacham, right? Again, 100 different formulations, because we're going to seize on whatever it is that the person was about. You can't make stuff up out of whole cloth. That doesn't serve any utility. But to raise up the actual virtues, and maybe even to exaggerate a little bit, that's a reflection of what it is that we as a people, we as a community, consider to be the values that we aspire to. And implicitly, we're making the argument that when we pass away, we hope that others will remember those virtues about us. There's a beautiful comment in source number 23 of a man called Rabbi Shimon Sidon. He wrote a book called Shevet Shimon. And again, I'll just summarize it for you. But he says part of the function in delivering a eulogy is to inspire others to live the kind of life that the decedent lived. And you could see this explicitly in source number 24 in the Nite Gavrili. Says, Beyamim she'ein maspidim. Right? This is the answer to this question. What is it about the gimmick? So he says, it's not a gimmick. There's two aspects to the eulogy. And we kept on seeing it, but we didn't highlight it, right? One aspect is to get people to cry and to be sad. And if it's Rosh Chodesh, or it's Chodesh Nisan, or it's Chol HaMoed, that is not appropriate. It's a day of simcha, it's a day of joy, and to start crying and wailing, that doesn't go with the spirit of the day. So you can't do that. But there's a second aspect of Hesped, which is not in opposition to the nature of the day, right? And that is to offer words of praise, to sing the praises of the person, right? What we say, words of tribute. He says, "Be'amim she'im aspidim mutar lomar eze dziver his oros bekitzur le'orer mishpachto le'leich bidarchei Hashem ve'le'leich bidrachav shel haniftar." So you don't tell the tear-jerking story, but you could say something which is inspiring, because by hearing those words, people will be moved to live in the image of the person who they just heard about. That's not in opposition to the happiness of Rosh Chodesh. That's perfectly consistent with the happiness of Rosh Chodesh. We're happy because Hashem gave us the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, and we're able to have a Jewish calendar, and we're able to observe the Chagim, and we're able to perform Torah, learn Torah, and perform mitzvahs. So here was a person who did those things, and I'm hearing about them, and I'm learning about them, and maybe I'll try to be a little more like them. That's not a gimmick. That's not in opposition to the theme of the day. That's perfectly consistent with the theme of the day. So you just have to pause and bifurcate the two reasons why we're actually delivering eulogy to bring people to tears. No, that we're not doing. Today's Rosh Chodesh. But to move people, to inspire people, to give people a sense of what our virtues are, what our values are, so that they might live in a more inspired way, how is that in opposition to the day at all? It's perfectly consistent with the day. Just want to close by sharing one or two final sources. I think this will be the last source that I share with you, and then we'll wrap up any remaining questions. Source number 25. This was one of our unanswered questions. One of the first questions, I think Steve asked this question, or maybe it was Dr. Rosenberg. Just whose obligation is it, right? Who has to give the hesped? We've not answered that question. So look at the Aruch HaShulchan. He says, "Amnam yesh lahavin mi v'mi hem hachayavim behesped." Just who is it that has an obligation to deliver? We've been talking for an hour about these words of hesped that are supposed to move people and inspire. Who's giving the hesped? He says, "Dehayispar b'siman zeh shemaspidim hesakol ish v'isha tinok v'tinokes." He says, everyone gets a hesped. A man, a woman, an adult, a child, everyone gets a husband. He says, what? The whole community is going to stop what they're doing and start delivering a hesbedim? Impossible. Can't be. He says, the default is, as again we've all intuited, the default is that the obligation falls to the krovim, it falls to the relatives. They'll cry and they'll wail and they will eulogize the person who's passed away. And if it's appropriate, v'imyesh minhag l'skor mekononos v'chalilim l'haspeit m'chuyavim la'asoskein levad albito kishi nesua chiyuv al habal, including hiring people, with the one exception that If we're talking about a woman who's passed away, so the woman was married, so the obligation falls to her husband as opposed to her other family members. Okay. V'im ein minhag b'zeh kamo b'zmanenu shelo shamanu haminhag hazel klal yasbudim be'atzman b'dvarim u'bechios im'at v'imarbet. He says, by the way, I never heard of this, hiring people. He says, it never happened in my lifetime. He says, we don't do that. The family gives the eulogies, and that's that. The last line, the bolt. He says, ach, al hadam hamuflag b'chachma v'ira. And again, I don't think it's an accident that you keep seeing 17 different synonyms for who this person is. The tzaddik, the chassid, the chacham, the gadol, because it's going to be in the eyes of the beholder. Ach al adam hamuflag b'chachma v'yira. If someone is a giant in chachma or in yira, zehu chiyuv al kol ha'ir. Kemosh nispar b'siyat ha'shmai v'chein erili shekein ikar b'din ha'hesped. Okay, so this is amazing. Okay, and this is totally not intuitive. He says a regular person, so the obligation of the hesped falls to the family. But if someone is a special person, someone was a particularly great fill in the blank, they were particularly great Talmud Chacham, they were particularly great Davener, they were particularly great at Chesed, whatever it is, so then we have to seize on that opportunity. And no one gets a pass. Everyone is actually obligated in the mitzvah of eulogizing that person. Now, as a matter of practice, we'll kind of, you know, get together and assign, you know, this person will be our representative and there'll be a rabbi who represents the community to perform that function. But wow, whoever thought that the rabbi is getting up to give a eulogy and is representing me because I, as a member of the community, actually share an obligation to be eulogizing this person. Okay, what an extraordinary formulation of what this mitzvah is all about. The obligation is on everyone, okay, because the main thing we'll accomplish when it comes to eulogy is that we'll create a template for how to live a life by articulating the values and the virtues of the person that we're eulogizing, the person that that we've lost. Okay, so just to try to tie everything together, to answer up any loose ends, let me see if I can take us through the questions that were left hanging and wrap them all up, and then we'll continue with Kinos. It's a great mitzvah to deliver eulogy, because I would say it's a great opportunity. Here we have the chance to really focus on what matters. Here we have a chance to hold out as a role model someone who will help us live our lives with more virtue. We need the material to work with to accomplish this goal. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's less obvious. The person doesn't need to have been a tzaddik. He had aspects of his life that were exemplary. Here we have an opportunity to talk about them and say something that will be powerful enough to move the people listening in the audience. And that's why we keep coming back to this formulation. The person was an Adam Kasher, the person was a Chassid. Whatever it was that epitomized their virtue, that's what we'll seize on and that's what we will emphasize. So what does it mean that the person is listening even after they've passed away? What about the rest of us who are still in the world of the living? Yes, it is for the deceased, but as the Gesher HaChaim wrote, it's also for us. They're listening and we're listening. It's our opportunity to give voice to what matters so that our lives are not the same. In the case of a gadol, like we saw with the Pnei Yeshua and Rabbi Kiva Eger, we really can't let it go. And even if they've said, I don't want a eulogy, we don't listen because at the end of the day, we can't lose that opportunity to be inspired by the life that they've led. As the Aruch HaShulchan said, that's the whole essence of the eulogy. And as we already talked about from the Nitei Gavriel, we really can have it both ways. The fact that it's Rosh Chodesh or another day when we don't deliver eulogies, that shouldn't stop us, because we understand that fundamentally there's two elements. One is mournful, one is sad. That's not appropriate for the festive day. But one is educational, edifying, uplifting, inspiring. And that, of course, is totally consistent with the day itself. It's not just the work of one moment. It's the work of the whole Shiva. And that's why there's even on the books this notion that sometimes you could have a hesped even after the burial. There's a component that transcends grief. We're actually doing something salutary. We're actually doing something constructive. The life of the person that's gone is so mechubad, is so honored, and so heavy, because that life is also the foundation upon which to build our lives. We're taking away something that will hold us and will inspire us. And when we do, we take with us a piece of them. I'll just say parenthetically, we actually did this during COVID. Right? This was actually not uncommon. Sometimes there would be a funeral. It would be very expeditious. There'd be nobody there. And then at the Shiva, there would be the Hespedim. And, you know, this happened often in COVID. So it was like, oh, it's totally unprecedented. It's not unprecedented, right? All these halachos come straight out of the Shulchan Aruch. In certain circumstances, the hesped will follow or will follow the burial or overflow in to the Shiva. And we actually saw this with our own eyes during the pandemic. As much as our own words of Hesped are about the dead, and I'll conclude with this final thought, as much as the words of Hesped are about the dead, they're also about the living, and about how we ought to live so that consciously or otherwise, we ask ourselves the question, what will they say about us when we're gone? And when we come out of that funeral, having listened to those words of eulogy, we won't just have been moved to tears, but will have been moved to emulate the life of the person that we've just heard about. The last thing I'll say is that on Tisha B'Av, the kinos function as our hesped for everything that we've lost and everything that we mourn on this day. The Beis Hamikdash, the pogroms, the massacres, the Holocaust. For the last 2,000 years, we've suffered these tragedies, and these kinos functionally are the hespedim that we're delivering for what it is that we've lost, and we should keep in mind these two elements. Yes, they're so sad, and they're kinos, and they're lamentations, and they should move us to tears, but they should also inspire us. Look what these people were willing to go through and willing to sacrifice because they believed in something. They cared so much about something. They cared so much about Torah and mitzvos that they were willing to put their lives on the line and make the ultimate sacrifice so that we and future generations could sit in a community and observe a holiday and continue the course that that they held so dear. Those kinos should function as an inspiration for all of us as we recite them together over these coming moments in the observance of Tisha B'Av. We'll continue with kinos in just a moment.